A woman approached me after my event last night and she was in tears. Now, political conservatism and Christianity are not the same exact thing. I want to clarify that. But she was in tears because as a conservative Christian, she felt targeted directly by the things that we're watching unfold in the news lately. Between Minnesota and Charlie Kirk, she was in tears because she feels like as a conservative Christian, that violence was aimed at all of us. And guys, we can't turn our back on that violence anymore. I want to share with you exactly what I told her because it's time to dive into exactly what's going on in the world and what we need to do about it as Christians. Hey friends, so if you follow me, you know that I don't follow politics all that deeply. I'm just not called to focus all that much on it. So I wasn't intimately familiar with Charlie Kirk and his work and who he was. But I heard about his murder when a friend of mine called me and told me that someone who was known as a right-wing activist and a lightning rod was shot and killed. And my friend also didn't really follow politics, but I could tell you that even among conservative Christians, for a lot of us who didn't know Charlie Kirk's work, that was the general brand that he had. But looking more into the work that he did since the shooting, something didn't line up with that brand. See, guys, Kirk actually didn't seem to get off on making inflammatory statements and starting fights with people. He wasn't one of those people who loved to be hated. He was actually one of the very few people willing to do what most Americans, left or right-leaning, have stopped doing. He was willing to do something really radical. Ready? He was willing to listen to people who disagreed with him and talk to them. Adam Rubinstein wrote about him that we could disagree about anything, and we did. But he would, without fail, engage civilly and explain his point of view. That's the spirit he took to hundreds of campuses he visited. Not denunciation, not shouting down, never an insult. He sought to debate ideas, and he did so in hostile territory. Charlie all but recreated the public town square in those campuses with a tent and an irrepressible smile in an era where many people in his generation can't look up from their phones. Guys, even if he disliked his views politically or disagreed with them, based on my very limited knowledge of Charlie Kirk and looking into that, I think that's accurate. He opened the door to debate with anyone in an era where everyone is fleeing from people they disagree with, and he wanted to debate anywhere, anytime, and he'd give his opponent the microphone. And that openness he had to his ideological enemy was apparently driven by a faith in something deeper than politics. He said in one interview that if he dies, he wants to be remembered for, quote, courage for my faith. That would be the most important thing. And I want to honor his death by remembering that openness he had to people he disagreed with, because it's something worth looking at and holding up as an example and imitating in a world where dialogue is mostly dead. But guys, I think we also need to respond to his death and the recent death of those school children in Minnesota by doing even more, and by letting this be a turning point for America, because we need to make it one. Guys, because we've been a frog in boiling water for way too long. And if you're unfamiliar with that macabre imagery, if you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, it's said that it'll jump right out. But if you put it into cold water and slowly heat up the flame, it'll boil to death without even knowing what's going on around it. And I think that's a good summary of what's happening right now. It's a good summary of how we've mainstreamed the demonizing of, quote, conservative Christianity for the past 25 years. Now, of course, political conservatives have done a lot of dividing in the past 25 years, too. I'm not overlooking that point. But the recent wave of violence has been overwhelmingly directed, aimed at political conservatives. And while there are lots of reasons for that, one we can't afford to overlook anymore is the brand that conservative Christians currently wear, and it's a brand that's been heating up to a boil for a very long time. How long? Well, in my own life, I remember the early 2000s when relativism was all the rage, and I was in high school and then moving into early college, and I remember as a firm believer in Jesus, I didn't just believe that Jesus is my truth, true for me, but no, I believe that Jesus is actually who he said he was, such that if you disagree with me, that you're wrong. And I'll never forget the first time in high school hearing strange new accusations that I was labeled, quote, bigoted and closed-minded and intolerant for thinking that Jesus is actually who he said he was, not just for me, but actually for real, in real life. But that language, true for me, you, Chris, that's true for you. I have a truth for me. That really confused me. It confused me because, guys, I'm not God. I don't get to invent a truth for me. But while that language kind of confused me, the label I was being given was crystal clear. The label that I was given was that, Chris, if you think that you are actually right about something of a spiritual or moral nature, you're an intolerant person. I eventually wrote a great little booklet about that that's used at my kids' school called Absolute Relativism. And I wrote that years later because of how much that experience upset me and bewildered me as a high school kid. Because I saw back then how harmful it would be for the cause of the gospel and for the labeling of Christians. But I remember looking at my friends back then and thinking, guys, dude, don't you know me? Hey, it's me. It's Chris. You know, I actually love you. Like, we grew up together. And even though we disagree about the divinity of Jesus, not only do I tolerate you, we're friends. I like you. And Jesus commands me to love you. And I really do. But nothing I said penetrated. See, the brand was fixed. And it was fixed by powers far larger than teenage Chris. It was fixed by the media and by so many movements in society that were determined to write off Christianity as a backwards, bigoted thing from the past. And labeling Christians mean and intolerant was the perfect way to get the job done. And for countless of my teenage friends who I went through youth group with, they would leave the faith right away in college because no one wants to go to college and be known as the intolerant bigot. But you know, I figured I'm going to stay faithful to Jesus. Okay, fine, label me. I'll take one for the team. Blessed are the persecuted. Fast forward now to 2015. Let's heat up the water a little bit more. I remember distinctly that that was the year that the Christian brand went from intolerant to hater. That if you held on to traditional biblical natural law-based views about things like marriage, what you were doing was standing against love. And I remember debating with old friends once again and explaining once more that, look, I don't actually hate anyone. The Lord commands that I love people. I just don't agree with them. But that doesn't mean I hate them. No matter, I lost, man. I lost the brand battle, even though I was right. See, because the brand shift was completed by powers far larger than me, by movements and marketing agencies that I couldn't compete with. And I remember around that same time that the brand successfully shifted from intolerant to hater, that new phrase that became so dang popular around 2015. I remember watching young people go more and more into hiding about their faith, especially on college campuses. I was on this one college campus, I'll never forget this, in New Jersey, shortly after the 2015 marriage debate dust had settled. And after my talk, the director of inclusivity and diversity from the campus came up to me and she said, Chris, 67% of our campus is Christian. Most of them are Catholics. I mean, we're like in the Mecca of New Jersey Italian Catholicism. And all of them are afraid to even tell anyone they're Christians. She's like, what's going on? She's like, our pride groups are like 2% of the campus and they let everyone know. I'm really confused, Chris. And she was being totally genuine. And I was kind of confused too. I didn't know how to answer a question. I scratched my head. I'm like, I don't know. Oh, well, I guess this is the new label. The water just heated up a little bit more. I guess we'll take one for the team again. I'm not going to leave Jesus. I guess that's the new label I have to bear. But over time, guys, that brand of conservative Christianity got even worse. And the water started to boil more and more as it moved from intolerant to hateful to harmful. You see, and why is that worse? Well, because if someone's just wrong, let's go back before intolerant, well, you could just agree to disagree. But if they're intolerant, we probably can't be friends. But if they're hateful, it's best to avoid them and leave them out of polite society. They really shouldn't be a part of things anymore. But if they're harmful, well, now we can't just leave them out. They're a problem that needs to be weeded out to keep people safe. Well, safe from what? Someone is going to ask. Well, safe from you, conservative Christians. You see, it's absolutely now an accepted cultural norm to talk about conservative Christian views, especially around things like gender and reproductive issues, as if they're an existential threat to women who want to be liberated and to people who consider themselves LGBT. Even though, and I have to note this because I'm proud of it, even though I can't find a single instance of direct physical violence of a Catholic against any of those people. And I'm proud that I can't find that when I look online. And it should be the case that there is no violence. And I want to reiterate that, because no matter how crazy this world gets, if we're claiming to follow Jesus, we need to actually follow Jesus. Amen? And again, now, not that political conservatism and Christianity are the same exact things, though there's a lot of overlap, especially with hot button issues. During the last election, we watched as half the country was successfully relabeled and branded, not in like crazy left-wing publications, but in a mainstream way, that if you vote a certain way, half the country, guys, that you're labeled as a Nazi, that you're labeled as a fascist. We watched it become commonplace for people to regard speech or even beliefs that are too conservative as being so harmful that they're considered violence. We watched as the national dialogue shifted to regard violence as a valid form of political speech. It's not, for the record. And look, guys, political or not, and again, if you follow my ministry, you know that I'm not overly political. But if you identify as a Christian, you might be the next target. Just like those school children were in Minnesota who weren't even old enough to vote. But here's the thing, guys. If the branding of conservative Christians as harmful little fascists who pose an existential threat to a portion of society, if that branding is correct, I suppose that targeting people almost in self-defense makes sense. Of course, the branding is not correct. It's delusional. It's pure evil. And targeting people as a result is also pure evil. So what do we do in the face of all this evil? Okay, I want to share with you the advice that I gave that woman who approached me in tears, afraid for her life last night. And I want to share this advice because I think it's what Jesus would say to us right now if he were here in the flesh. And I think he would say it because he actually did say it. Three pieces of advice. Number one, love your enemy. Guys, if you want to know where the dividing line is between a sane world and an insane world, a world where goodness rules and the rule of law prevails, and a world where everything's on fire, you know where the line is? It's right in the middle of every human heart. And look, while the political violence most recently in the news is left aimed at right, it just is. I'm not taking political sides here. That's just a fact. It can really easily pivot from one side to the other too. And why? Because there are human beings on both sides. And if we're honest with ourselves, this is kind of a sick part of humanity that I don't like to look at, but it's real. There's actually something psychologically soothing about labeling a person or an entire group of people as our enemy, our existential threat. I get why the idea catches on so fast, because it adds laser clarity and focus in this really scary, uncertain experience of life to someone out there. There's my threat. There's the thing I fear. It's over there? Cool. I'm safe over here, right? Guys, we all have that temptation inside of us, and it's evil, and we have to resist it. And listen, lest you think, well, Jesus can't relate with how bad the world is right now. No, no, no. When he said, love your enemy, he was talking to a world where death, where political violence, where vengeance was absolutely everywhere. Life in his day was short, it was uncertain, and it was often bloody. He gets it. So how do you love your enemy in a world like that? Do what Charlie Kirk did. Give your enemy the microphone. Let him talk. Listen to him. Stop running away from him in fear. Guys, that's the world that Jesus worked to build. Even if you disagree with Jesus, even if you disagree with Charlie Kirk, maybe you're a non-believer watching me right now and also not a political conservative, don't you want that world? The world Jesus built when he brought people like Simon and Matthew together. I want you to think for a minute. This is radical. This is totally radical. Simon the Zealot, Matthew the tax collector. Guys, a tax collector in Jesus' time, he was a traitor. He was awful. Israel was oppressed, was occupied by Rome, and tax collectors, they made their living by taking taxes from their countrymen for their oppressor and charging them a little extra than they needed to do so they could skim off the top and keep it for themselves. Zealots were the other extreme. They were the group of people who hated Rome and acted on it. They were the ones who would show up at a large Roman festival and stab a Roman soldier just to start a riot. And guys, when Jesus called Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector to follow him, he called them before They were totally transformed by his grace. Before they each understood each other. Before they each understood themselves and how wrong they had been. And Jesus sat them down together at the same table for a meal. Love your enemy. And Jesus warned us in Matthew 24 that in the end, quote, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold, but the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. Because the clear implication here is that if your heart does grow cold, you will not be saved. That's a lot. See, love your enemy is not a suggestion. It's a mandate if you're to call Jesus your Lord. Guys, in the end, I think one of the greatest tests we're going to go through as a church, it's not going to be this great temptation to keep the faith as we're fed to the lions. It's going to be the temptation to let our hearts grow cold, the battle to keep loving those who feed us to the lions. So how do you love your enemy? Start here, guys. Maybe this is all I got in you today as you watch the news. Pray for them. Just pray that they don't end up in hell forever. Pray that they find God's grace and salvation before they die. Start there. So love your enemy. Number two, I'm going to say this one very boldly and directly because I think Jesus said it very boldly and directly. Do not be afraid of death. Matthew 10:28. Do not fear those who can kill the body but are not able to kill the soul. And I told this to that woman in front of me. I said, look, if Charlie Kirk died in the grace of God, if he died with great faith, then I think he's looking at Jesus right now. He's in the beatific vision. He's not worried about a dang thing. And that's what we all have to keep in mind as this world becomes increasingly dangerous. Because if we give in to fear, then every terrorist-type person out there has won. Their mission is accomplished. I don't care how crazy things get. I pray that they don't get crazier. But I'm not going to stop being me. I'm not going to stop doing what I do. Love your enemy. Resist fear. And then finally, three, guys, push back on what's become the new normal in society. It has become the new normal to pick on Christians. It really is. It's socially acceptable. And we need to start pushing back. I don't mean in a spirit of anger. I don't mean sounding like every other angry political voice out there. No, no. We should sound different because we are different if we're following Jesus Christ. But you got to stop letting people just get away with saying, oh, Christians, bigoted, hateful, intolerant, harmful. No, no. Speak up. Respond to that label. It's up to all of us to start fixing the label that Christians bear. And I know it's okay. Be willing to take one for the team. Be willing to be mislabeled. Be willing to be persecuted. But if you're just silent in the face of all those mislabels, all you do is embolden people who want to make the label worse. So make clear that which is obvious to you. Say the obvious, the thing I used to say to my friends in high school. Hey, look, I disagree with you, but that doesn't mean I don't love you. I disagree with you, but I will not for a moment budge on this. I am not intolerant, bigoted, hateful. In fact, I'm only speaking the truth and putting my neck out there on the line because I love you. You could disagree with me. Doesn't mean I don't love you. Doesn't mean you can't love me. But guys, when we let that brand grow and we're silent in the face of it, we're not just putting ourselves at risk. We're putting little kids at risk who want to go to mass at their school and not feel targeted. We're putting a woman who comes up to me shaking and in tears at my event at risk. And she's shaking in tears because she is at risk. She knows it. Guys, start pushing back with the truth. If you're at work and your HR department wants to label Christian views inherently harmful, dude, do not go along with that. Speak out. Sue them if you have to. Not for your sake, but for the sake of the Christian brand that's been in boiling water for too dang long. Guys, you have a right to believe Judeo-Christian views about marriage, gender, and so much more, just like everybody has a right to be who they say they are in society today. Claim that space. And look, I don't care who you voted for. Stop legitimizing all accusations that group X over there, they're all hateful, bigoted, harmful Nazis. Dude, don't ever legitimize that with your silence. Speak up. Speak the truth. Let's actively work for a more sane world where we actually make space for each other, where we can disagree about important things and still love each other. And of course, I got to give credence to the fact that mental illness is part of the problem here. But when you add mental illness to a society-wide labeling and branding of a particular group as an existential threat, guys, this is what you get. And it's got to stop. It's got to end. It's got to end now. Love your enemy. Do not be afraid. And push back in that crazy rebrand of all things conservative and Christian as being inherently harmful, because we've been sitting in this boiling water for way too long. God bless you.